ॐ भद्रं कर्णेभिः शृणुयामदेवा भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैतुष्टवागुंसस्तनुभिः व्यशेमदेवहितं यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्ताक्ष्यो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ ओ गॉड्स मे वी हियर ऑस्पिशियस वर्ड्स विथ आवर इयर्स व्हाइल एंगेज्ड इन सैक्रिफाइसेस मे वी सी ऑस्पिशियस थिंग्स विथ आवर आईज व्हाइल प्रेजिंग द गॉड्स विथ स्टेडी लिम्स मे वी एंजॉय अ लाइफ दैट इज बेनिफिशियल टू द गॉड्स May Indra of ancient fame be auspicious to us. May the all-knowing Pusha, god of the earth, be propitious to us. May Garuda, the destroyer of evil, be well disposed towards us. May Brihaspati ensure our welfare. Om, peace, peace, peace. All right. So, we are towards the end of our study of the Mundaka Upanishad. And in this Mundaka Upanishad, we know that there are three chapters. Each chapter is called a Mundaka, and each chapter has two sections. So three chapters, each of two sections, a total of six sections. We have completed the first section of the third chapter. We have completed the first chapter, the second chapter, and then the first section of the third chapter. So we are on the final section of the Upanishad, the second section of the third chapter. So it's the final section of the Upanishad, and we are going to start that. I'm going to chant the first mantra of the second section of the third and final chapter. Savedaitat paramam brahma dhamma yatra vishvam nihitam bhati shubhram उपासते पुरुषं ये ह कामा ते शुक्रमेतद् अतिवर्तन्ति धीराः. व्हाट डज दैट मीन? आई विल रीड आउट फ्रॉम द ट्रांसलेशन बाय स्वामी गंभीरानंद जी. ही नोज दिस सुप्रीम अबोड दिस ब्रह्मन इन विच इज प्लेस्ड द यूनिवर्स एंड विच शाइन्स होली. दोज वाइज वंस इंडीड हु हैव बिकम डिजायरलेस Worship this enlightened person, transcend this human seed. So, what is going on in the final section is the means of enlightenment and the results of enlightenment. Here, in this first mantra, a very beautiful mantra, Mundaka Upanishad. I think the literary quality is extraordinary. It's so sublime. Here is this beautiful mantra. Saveda, the one who knows this. This means which? Go back to the original question asked by the student Shaunaka to the master Angiras. The question was, Sir, what is that by knowing which everything is known? So, Kasminnu bhagavo vijñate sarvamidam vijñatam bhavati iti. Sir, what is that by knowing which everything here, sarvam idam, this entire universe of tremendous diversity, all of it is known, all of it is known by knowing one thing. Very interesting. And then we understood later on that how can you know everything by knowing one thing? It is if the one thing is the material cause, then you know everything. What does that mean? The material cause of all clay pottery is clay. So if you know clay, you understand what clay is, then you know all pottery. In what sense? Whenever you are faced with a pot made of clay, you know that it is clay. And you also know whatever is made from clay, whatever, no matter what the kind of pottery it is, it will only be clay. Similarly, all waves, just water, all golden ornaments, no matter how, what their beautiful forms and names and innovations, they are gold. This lump of gold which you have, that itself will appear in many, many different ways. So in the same way, the claim is there is something in this universe. If you know that, you know the universe in reality. It doesn't mean you get an encyclopedic knowledge that you know everything in detail. No, what everything is in reality, that you know. All right, what is that? What is that one thing by knowing which everything is known? That is the most remarkable claim of the Upanishads. That is you. You are the fundamental reality of this universe, not as we know ourselves, this apparent self. Swami Vivekananda has a lecture, The Real Man and the Apparent Man. So the not this apparent self, as we truly are, what we truly are, when we know ourselves by inquiry, then you will realize that reality is this entire universe also. This entire universe is nothing but that one reality, which is pure consciousness, pure being, pure bliss, Sat Chit Ananda. So that was the claim. And the one who knows this, Ya Sa Veda Etat. Etat means this ultimate reality, which is one's own real self. So the one knows, I am this ultimate reality because it's my real self. I am Brahman. This is the nature of the knowledge we require. If you know there is something called Brahman, that's not what is being talked about. If you believe that there is a God, I believe that their God is there, I believe in God. That's not what is being talked about. You know that there is something called pure being, which is the ground of this universe. That's not what is being talked about. There is some ultimate reality called Brahman. No, no, no. The knowledge is, Saveda means the one knows, I am this, I am Brahman. That is enlightenment. What is this Brahman? Wonderful words are used to describe. Paramam Brahma Dhamma, Paramam transcendent. Brahman, the ultimate reality. And it's called Dhamma also, abode, we will see. Paramam, transcendent. This Brahman is transcendent means it is beyond Maya. One meaning is it is beyond the three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas. The constituents of Maya are sattva, rajas, tamas. Everything in Vedantic and Sankhyan cosmology, everything is constituted of this sattva guna, rajoguna, and tamoguna. But this Brahman, this ultimate reality, and by implication, you are actually beyond Maya. You are neither tamoguna, you're not under the sway of tamas or rajas or even sattva. You are beyond all three. All three are in nature, they are not you. Another meaning of beyond is that which transcends all object. That which is an object, so the one which is beyond, which it transcends this objective universe. And therefore, it is not an object to senses. You can't see it, hear it, smell it, taste it, touch it. So it is beyond sensory knowledge. It is beyond mind, intellectual knowledge. So, even deeper. Beyond Maya also means beyond space, time, and causation. So, Paramam transcends space, time, and causation. It's not something located in space. Space is something that appears in it. Think of our dream. Think of the space which we inhabit in the dream. We are actually not in that space. The dream space appears in the dreaming mind. Think of the space you see in a movie. In the movie hall, you see on the screen, you see space. Maybe it's a space movie. So you see lots and lots of space. But none of that is actually there. What is there is the screen. Similarly, Brahman, our real nature, it transcends space. It transcends time. Think about how in a movie, maybe a historical movie, centuries go by, maybe millennia go by in the story of the movie. But actually, it's not true. From the perspective of the reality, the watcher. Similarly, we Brahman, Atman is beyond time. It is beyond causation, cause and effect. Beyond causation, the Upanishad itself will mention in another place that it's beyond causation. But here, another thing, it's beyond object also. Beyond object means, everything in this universe is objective. People, places, gadgets, whatever you see in the universe, big and the small, planets and stars and the tiny and atoms and and our own body and our own perceptions and thoughts, they are all objects. Beyond objects means it is not an object in itself. It's not an object in itself. No object is different from Brahman. So beyond time, space, and object would mean, beyond space would mean that there is no space where the Brahman is not. That means in one sense, it's all pervasive. Beyond time would mean there is no time where Brahman is not. So Brahman is eternal. One point about this Brahman being eternal business. Whatever we see in this universe is constantly changing. And, you know, the Upanishads in Vedanta, Buddhism also, never fails in pointing out the transient changing nature of things. Somehow creating an implication in our mind, the ultimate reality, enlightenment, must be immortal or beyond time. It must be eternal. So heaven is described as eternal. God is described as eternal. Our soul as Atman or Brahman is described as eternal. But eternal really does not mean persisting through time. Let me dwell it on this in another way. See, things in time, things in the world constantly change. And that's the defect. Things are constantly changing. That which is constantly changing can never be a source of happiness. Now, it does not mean that we want an eternal world. It can't be. World by definition, by its very nature, must be constantly changing. Imagine a cookie. You eat a cookie and it's gone within seconds. And that's what a cookie should be like. Who wants an eternal cookie that will never go away? No, that's ridiculous. So the solution for the transient nature of the world is not to make an eternal world. You cannot do it, and it would not solve anything. It would be some kind of monstrosity. The solution which spiritual life offers is to step outside time altogether. It's to be not to be part of this plot in which time and space and object are there. It's to step outside the movie. There's time in the movie of the world. You step outside the world into a timeless reality. That is real eternity. As somebody, I think it's Shakespeare, time must have a stop. So time must have a stop. We don't want time to continue and then also us to continue in time. That would be no solution at all. So eternal, beyond Brahman is Paramam, transcends time, means it's eternal in the sense which I mentioned, timeless, time must have a stop. Aldous Huxley used it, I think, in one of the name of one of his novels. So time must have a stop. Very beautifully phrased. Then object. So objects are all different from each other. But Brahman transcends objects means it is not one more object among other objects. If you make a catalog of all things in this universe, you will not find one item called Brahman. You will not find one item called Atman. If you make a catalog of all the pottery in a pottery display, one of the items will not be clay. The clay is the reality of all the pottery. It is the only thing that there is. From the perspective of clay, there is only clay. From the perspective of gold, in a display of gold and jewelry, there is only gold. So Brahman is not an existing thing. But it is that out of which all existing things are coined. So there is no object which is other than Brahman. There is no second object apart from Brahman. No second. Advaitam, non-dual, Advaitam. So Paramam Brahma, transcendent Brahman, also means the all-pervasive Brahman, Sarvavyapi, the eternal Brahman, Nityam, and also non-dual Brahman, Advaitam. Another meaning of transcendent is transcends all differences. Three kinds of differences, Bheda, the differences between one thing and another thing. You know, a cat and a dog, which is called difference in the kind of thing, the species or the classification is different. So, say a mountain and a river, they are different things. But there is no such difference in Brahman. There is no different thing apart from Brahman. It is not that there is Brahman and there is some other things other than Brahman. No, there aren't. Whatever appears to be other than Brahman is only that, an appearance. It's not the reality. The second kind of difference is sajatiya bheda. Yes, there are no things apart from Brahman, but there can be more than one Brahman, multiple Brahmans, multiple, but that does not make sense. Multiple infinities, multiple ultimate realities. No. With each thing, each Brahman would limit the other one. Limit means if there is Brahman 1, Brahman 2, Brahman 3, I'm talking about Brahman, right? Not Brahmin. There can be many Brahmins, but the Brahman is only one, because if you have 1, 2, 3 Brahmins like that, in that case, the first Brahman will be other than the second one, and therefore less than, less by that much. It is separated from something else. There will be something in this universe which Brahman 1 is not. So Brahman 2, Brahman 3. So nothing like that. There cannot be multiple infinities. In fact, this is the strong argument of Advaita Vedanta against the Sankhyan Bahupurushavada. The Sankhyan says there are multiple sentient, there are multiple consciousnesses. We are all separate from each other. Each of us is pure consciousness, but there are many pure consciousnesses, plural. That's Sankhya say that. Advaita says then this consciousness cannot be infinite. Infinite means there cannot be anything, there cannot be any limit at all. There cannot be anywhere it stops. So there is no multiple Brahmans. There's only one Brahman. All right, the third kind of difference is differentiation within itself. Here is one body, it's true, it's one, but there's a differentiation within. There are hands and feet and tummy and head. A tree has an internal differentiation, roots and branches and leaves, and trunk and flowers and fruits. So does Brahman have internal differences? You'll recognize immediately this is the doctrine of Vishishtadvaitavada, the doctrine of qualified monism. Brahman is limitless existence, consciousness, bliss, qualified by the world and all sentient beings. Jiva Jagat Vishishta Brahma. They are parts of Brahman. But there is no part and whole relationship here. There's only one limitless, homogeneous real. Think about it in a more subtle way. Say a wooden table. A wooden table. What are the parts of the wooden table? The wooden table has a top, it has a bottom, it has four legs, so it has multiple parts. Now, consider it from the perspective of the wood itself. Does the wood have parts? Or is the top of the table, bottom of the table, the four legs of the table, are they parts of wood? No. Wood is just wood. They are names and forms which constitute parts of the entity called table. But from the perspective of wood, they're not parts of wood. So, similarly, this entire universe with its diversity appearing and experienced and transacting, they do not constitute any part of Brahman, any part of reality. They are an appearance, not parts of reality. All this, beyond the three gunas, beyond time, space, and object, causation also, but we'll come to that later, beyond time, space, and object, beyond the three kinds of differences, eternal, all-pervasive, non-dual, all of this is the meaning of Paramam, transcendent. It is beyond. Somebody, there was a Swami or a character, I don't know, I remember the name, Beyond Ananda. The Ananda who's beyond, whose bliss is in the beyond. But in that sense, we are all beyond Ananda. Paramam Brahma. It is transcendent. Who is transcendent? You are. The one who realizes this, realizes this, I am this Paramam, this transcendent Brahman. Beyond Maya, beyond the three gunas, eternal, all-pervasive, non-dual, without any differences of the same kind, different kinds, or internal differences. Sajatiya, Vijatiya, Swagata, Bheda, Rahita. Brahma Dhamma. And this Brahman is also called abode. Abode. Dhamma is a word used for, the heavenly abode, for example. The Dhamma, the abode of Vishnu, or the abode of Shiva. We just had Shivaratri, so the abode of Shiva is Kailasha. The abode of Vishnu is Vaikuntha. And in all religions, you have some kind of idea of a perfect abode. You go from this world of imperfection, go to an abode of perfection, Dhamma. That's why secondarily pilgrim places are also called Dhamma. Kashi and Mathura and Ayodhya, they're all called Dhamma. Now, Brahman is called Dhamma. Notice here, Brahman is the Dhamma. It's not the abode of Brahman. It's not like Vishnu staying in the heaven called Vaikuntha. It is not like Shiva staying in the heaven called Kailasha. No, not like that. It's not that there is an abode in which Brahman stays. No. The abode and Brahman are the same thing. The abode and Brahman are the same thing. To illustrate this, there is a nice term used in India. We have a term called Rahu Kshira, the head of Rahu. Now, all Indian kids know this, that Rahu is the monster who gobbles up the sun and the moon, solar eclipse and lunar eclipse. So, what is this lunar eclipse and solar eclipse? So, there was this demon called Rahu who had the power given by God to, if he wanted, he could eat up the sun, eat up the moon, and which he promptly proceeded to do. And so plunged the world into darkness. And so God had to come and rescue the world from darkness. Vishnu sends his discus, the famous Sudarshan Chakra, which comes and cuts off Rahu's head. So then the moon and the sun emerge from his throat. And so again, the world is delivered back into light. Now, Rahu is just a head. There's no body left. It's been cut off. Rahu is still there. He's just a head. And he regularly proceeds to devour the moon and the sun. But we just need not be scared. We just have to be patient because he's just a head. When he devours the moon, it will come out from his throat in a short while. So that's the explanation of the eclipse. That is. But the point here, an interesting point is the head of Rahu. We say the head of Rahu. But Rahu is just an head, just a head, because there's no body at all anymore. Similarly, when you say Brahma Dhamma, it does not mean the heavenly abode of Brahman. It means Brahman is the Dhamma, just like Rahu is the head. Similarly, Brahman is the Dhamma. Brahman is that abode. What is that abode? It is being itself, existence itself, consciousness itself, fulfillment itself. In fact, Shankaracharya will explain this Dhamma as the abode of all fulfillment, where all that we want in life is fulfilled. Sarva kama, all desires are fulfilled. That is Brahman. After all, why would you engage in all of this? It is because what we are pursuing is the fulfillment of all desires. All that we are motivated by, not just us, all sentient beings, we are all motivated by the desire to overcome suffering and to attain fulfillment. Primarily by the desire to attain fulfillment. We are willing to undertake suffering also if we can get fulfillment, if we can get happiness. Only thing is, we get this fractional, transient, temporary, painful, reaction-producing happiness. And is there anything else? Spirituality, all spirituality says there is. There is a fulfillment which is beyond the senses, beyond earthly fulfillment. And that is what we are ultimately seeking. So that ultimate fulfillment, where we are forever fulfilled without the least drawback, without the least pain or reaction, that ultimate fulfillment which enlightened beings have, this is called Dhamma. I'm not making it up, Shankaracharya's explanation, we'll see. Then the next, very beautiful, Yatra Vishwam Nihitam. And in this Brahman, which is you, the self, this entire world is set. Nihitam means like you set jewels in a nice piece of jewelry, you set gems. Or it actually means set in what sense? You might say the pot is set in the clay. The waves are set in water. The ornaments are set in the gold. The dream universe, whatever you see in the dream, all the people in the dream, all the events in the dream, they are set in the dreaming mind. In other words, Brahman itself appears as this universe. But here it is said, Yatra Vishwam Nihitam, here the universe is set. And the next word, Bhati, it shines. It shines. Where does it shine? Here. You see, you can see it shining. You can hear it, you can smell it, you can taste it, touch it, you think. In every experience, it shines forth. Those who do not realize, this is for the enlightened ones, Sarveda, one who has realized this, I am Brahman. Those who do not realize it, for them, yeah, I'm seeing, so what? I'm seeing objects and people. Where is Brahman? I am hearing, I'm smelling, I'm tasting. So where is this Brahman? Bhati, it shines. What do you mean the universe is set in Brahman? See, this is the ultimate teaching of Advaita Vedanta. Advaita Vedanta does not actually want to prove that you're pure consciousness. That's not so difficult to prove. Sankhya has already proved it. Advaita Vedanta wants to establish the oneness of all existence. Vivekananda said that Vedanta is two things: the divinity within ourselves and the oneness of all existence. So even the so-called teaching of the falsity of the universe is a methodology, what is called prakriya, a pedagogical methodology to bring us to the realization Brahman alone exists. The point is not to teach the falsity of the universe. The point is to show there is one divine reality, and you are that. You means the real you. Yatra Vishwam Nihitam, where the universe, entire universe is set in Brahman, in you. And it like a jewel, it is set, like a jewel, it shines. Bhati. The deeper meaning of Bhati is self-luminous. Self-luminous. This is a concept you come across again and again in the Upanishads. Like light, it illumines everything. The objects are, do not shine. Tables and chairs and people, they don't shine. They don't reveal themselves. And they don't reveal other things. To see all of them, just perceive, the example of seeing, you need to switch on a light. When the light comes on, you can see all objects and all people and everything that the light falls on, it illumines. And the light itself is remarkable. It's also there, but it shines by itself. It does not require another light to reveal itself. It shines and illumines everything. Similarly, Atman, Brahman, pure consciousness, it shines and illumines everything. Bhati, it shines. That which shining, everything else shines. So Atman shining, mind shines with reflected consciousness. All of our senses shine with consciousness borrowed from the shining mind. And the senses shining, we, forms and sounds and taste and flavor and all of that, smell, they all touch, they all shine, and the universe shines. But it all shines because of pure consciousness. A deeper analysis. What is this self-luminosity? It's like this. You see, we are all, the only thing that is self-luminous is the self, Atman. Everything else depends on it. So you shining, everything else shines after you. Everything is revealed by you, the consciousness. But your own existence, our own existence, is not revealed by anything else. It is self-revealed. Now, the analysis is like this. Follow this carefully. That I exist, I have no doubt. That everything else is revealed by me, the consciousness. Consciousness operating through mind and senses reveals the world. Consciousness operating through or shining on the mind reveals thoughts and emotions and ideas. So everything is revealed by consciousness through the mind and the senses. But consciousness itself, I know its existence directly. I know that I exist. It was Descartes' great discovery. The one thing that cannot be doubted is my own existence. Now, here is the question which we're going to deliberate upon for a few minutes. How do I know my own existence? I say I'm certain of my own existence. But my question is, how do I know my own existence? How do I know that a computer is here? I see it. How do I know that I have eyes? I can see it in a mirror. The very fact that I'm seeing things shows me that I've got eyes. How do I know science and history and religion? Through study of books and experiments and all of that. So all of these I know. How do I know? I am a knower. These are known objects, and I have instruments of knowledge. So I know this book. Book is the known object. And I am the knower. And the instrument of knowledge is the eyes. I, the knower, with the instrument of knowledge called the eyes, know the object called book. I, the knower, with the instrument called ears. Of course, the mind is there in between, mind and the ears. I know the object called sound, the sound which is coming. You know, you are hearing like this. You know all objects, they are called objects of knowledge, prameya in Sanskrit, prameya, object of knowledge. And you are the knower, pramata, the knower, this knowing subject. The knowing subject is constituted of consciousness, mind, reflected consciousness, all of it together is the knowing subject. You are the knower. And you have an instrument of knowledge. It could be the five senses and the mind and so on and so forth. So, knower, instrument of knowledge, the object of knowledge. In Sanskrit, pramata, knower, instrument of knowledge is called pramana, and the object of knowledge called prameya. And that leads to knowledge, which is in Sanskrit called prama. All right, fine so far. So, all knowledge is through these three. These three factors of knowledge: knower, instrument of knowledge, object of knowledge. Okay, notice they're all different. Knower is different from the instrument of knowledge, is different from the object. Now, ask this question. We all claim, I know that I exist, but how do I know my own existence? So, my own existence must be the object of knowledge. In that case, there must be somebody, some knower other than the object of knowledge, knowing with the help of some instrument other than the object of knowledge. What is the object of knowledge? My own self, my own existence, let's say. That's the object of knowledge. Then the one who knows this object of knowledge, my own self, must be different from the self and must be employing some instrument of knowledge which is different from the self. If you do that, then I, the knower of the self, must be different from the self. Then who knows that one? The knower of the self. Then you will have a prior self. To know that one, you will require one more self. And this is what is called regressus ad infinitum. In Sanskrit, in Nyaya logic, anavastha dosha, the fault of having no ground. There will be no end to this series. So the self, what it shows is it's a fault in reasoning. This is not the way to come to understand who is knowing the self. So the self is not known by the usual process of knower using instrument of knowledge, illumining an object of knowledge. That will not work for the self because it will lead to a regressus ad infinitum, anavastha dosha. And yet we have a fact before us which requires an explanation. I know my own existence. So it cannot be through that threefold factor. In Sanskrit, triputi, the usual way in which we know all things, that will not work for this knowing the self. Then the only other option is the self is self-revealed. It is not objectified by some other self, and using an instrument of knowledge, it's not known in the way other things are known. And if we notice in our own experience, yes, I am totally sure of my own existence, and yet, not in the way I'm sure of this book, or not in the way I'm sure of whatever I see in the world, or my own body, or even my own thoughts. Not in those ways. I know my own existence in some other way, something even more direct. This direct knowledge of my own existence, it shows that the self, my own existence, is self-luminous. This is called swaprakasha. All of this to explain this word, bhati. Shankaracharya will see. We'll see later on how he explains this. Bhati, it shines. Then next word, shubhram. Shubhram means pure or light or white. Here, pure here means beyond causality. Pure, everything that is within causality is impure. Cause and effect is within the law of karma. Here, shubhram, pure in the sense, it is beyond the law of karma, it's beyond causality. The entire world of objects, it runs on the law of karma. Good and good, dharma leads to good life, adharma leads to bad life, and dharma and adharma are all products of our desires, pursuing our objects of desire. Pursuing our objects of desire, we do good things and bad things, dharma and adharma. That produces results, and that's our life. That's our life. But this, your real nature, Shubhram, is pure already, whether you know it or not. Like that monk said to me once in the Himalayas, Tum jano ya na jano, tum mano ya na mano, tum hi Ram. Whether you know it or not, whether you believe it or not, agree to it or not, consent to it or not, you are God choicelessly. Choicelessly, you can't do anything about it. Shubhram, you are pure. Swami Vivekananda's famous line in the Song of the Sannyasin: good, good, bad, bad, and none escape the law. For whoever wears the form, wears the chain too. So that is karma. You cannot escape that. However, far beyond name and form is Atman, ever free. Or in the language of this, far beyond name and form is the real you, right now, ever free. No, thou art that sannyasi board, say Om Tat Sat Om. This is what Vedanta is teaching us. Shubhram, the pure. I love Gambhiranji's translation. Usually it is translated as which shines the universe. Universe set in Brahman shines pure. Gambhiranji translates it as so touching. He says, this Brahman, you know this Brahman, in which is placed the universe and which shines holy. So it is shining, and it's a holy shining. That is true. It's not some kind of impersonal fact. Oh, here's the universe, you know, he just said it's like the pot in clay or the gold in the ornament. If you see the ornament set in the gold. You know, it's so the gold is there and it's shining forth as the ornament. Fine, those are good examples. But those who are enlightened, they see the experience of this universe, the shining of this universe, as a holy experience, as a pure, sublime, holy experience, very ennobling experience. God in every experience, not only ennobling, sublime experience, holy, divine experience. For them, it is not just seeing God, which is very holy. It is just seeing anything and anybody, hearing anything and anybody, anything. Even before hearing the bhajan, a saint, just by hearing the tuning of the instruments, goes into samadhi. What's there in the tuning of the instruments? You first hear, wait, and hear the holy bhajans, the holy songs. Yes, that's very good. But the sound itself is holy. Sight itself is holy. Every person. Swami Brahmananda used to say, I find it difficult to teach. Wherever I look, and look, I see in all people, I see God only. Who am I to teach God? How can, in himself also, he sees the same one. Sarveda etat, he realizes that I am Brahman. How can God teach God? And he says, when my mind comes down a little, then I see, next he sees what? Maya, the sentient beings covered by ignorance. And he knows I can help there. I can, you know, bring God to see God. I can hold up a mirror in front of God. That's my service, my worship. So he can do that. Universe shines in Brahman and holy shining. Kena Upanishad, which we will read next after this. The Kena Upanishad says, Pratibodha viditam matam amritattvam hi vindate. In every experience, you must realize God. And effortlessly, you must realize God. And choicelessly and ceaselessly, it must be God. I'm using God language, theistic language. You can call it Brahman, you can call it, but the holy. You must realize the holy. So, where shines the universe holy? Holy shining. What an extraordinary experience. Imagine, just imagine the holiest experiences we have had in the presence of an enlightened being, in an ancient temple, in a moment of ecstatic prayer, in the moment of intense devotional music which uplifts your mind. All of that, but all the time, and even more than that. And in what? In just seeing the universe, experiencing the universe in every experience. So this is the state of the enlightened one. Now he says, that enlightened one. Remember the last mantra we did in the last section? It was recommending the worship, the adoration of the enlightened one, the guru. So he says, that enlightened one should be adored, worshipped by dhira, the spiritual seekers, the qualified spiritual seekers. Dhira means the qualified spiritual seeker. What should they do? Purusham upasate, such a being, such an enlightened one who has realized that by knowing which everything is known, that transcendent, paramam, beyond maya, eternal, all-pervading, non-dual, that Brahman which is itself the dhamma, the fulfillment of that all possible fulfillment, all at once, where this universe, This is the beauty of this teaching. It is grounded in this experience. It's not talking about some heaven somewhere which you will see after death. Here, the one which you are seeing. This universe is set in Brahman. And it shines. Yes, it shines. It shines wholly. Such a one, Purusham, such an enlightened one, Upasate, you, we, the spiritual seeker, we should worship, Upasate, worship, adore, have faith in. So this is the Guru Puja, this is the Guru culture, which is very prevalent in Hinduism, also to Buddhism and Jainism, and Sikhism, of course. The worship, the adoration, the reverence for the spiritual master, the enlightened spiritual master, of course. Now, just by worshipping and bowing down, and will it help us to become enlightened? He says, he just recommends the worship. And Shankaracharya will also say, Pujayet, worship the Guru, the enlightened one. But the deeper meaning, Upasate. Upasate definitely means worship. Upasana means worship. But the more precise literal meaning of Upasate is to sit near. Upasana means to sit near, from which the word Upanishad comes. So Upasana is to sit near. Sit near this enlightened being. Sit near this enlightened being. Sit where he or she is sitting. Where is this person sitting? The enlightened one, where is he sitting? He's sitting in Brahman. Is this enlightened guru? Where does he sit? It's a good thing to ask. Where does he sit? Where do we sit? And where does the enlightened one sit? Is the enlightened one sitting in his learning? Is the enlightened one sitting in the respect and the dignity of being the guru? Is the enlightened one sitting in power and in politics? Is the enlightened one sitting in the pride of being an enlightened one? Is the enlightened one sitting in the body? Sitting here. Where am I? I'm here. No. Is the enlightened one sitting in the mind? No. The enlightened one is sitting in Brahman. Sitting in Brahman means I am Brahman. There is the enlightened one. So put your asana near the enlightened one. Upasate, a very deep meaning. Sit where the guru is sitting. Sit next to the guru, upasate, sit near. Sit near means where is the guru sitting? The guru is not sitting in his glory as a learned person, as a holy person, as a leader of a religious movement, or as a recipient of so much adoration and reverence, or in identity with the body, sitting in the body like we do, sitting in the personality of the mind. No, the guru is sitting in Brahman. Sitting in Brahman means centered in Brahman. I am that. Upasana, this is the deeper meaning. When you do this, you will get the knowledge, the and of course, it all comes down to Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. You must hear these teachings from the enlightened one, contemplate it, and meditate upon it. Yehi akama. The two things, two words are used, akama, dhiraha. So, it also must be a prepared student. It's been talked about and will be talked about again. The fourfold qualifications we know, viveka, the discernment between the eternal and the non-eternal, vairagya, dispassionate about worldly pursuits. See, akama means free of kama, desire. Akama. We are stuffed with desire in the mind. He'll come next. Why we don't get this enlightenment? We are stuffed with desire in the mind. We must purify this mind. Akama, purified of desire, rising out of desire. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. So, akama. So, dhira and akama together, they refer to the fourfold qualifications. Discernment, dispassion, vairagya, the six disciplines, that is, a quietude of the mind, serenity of the mind, control of the physical organs of the body, steadiness of the body. Then, a spiritual stamina, fortitude, in spite of all difficulties thrown at me by the world, I shall persist in my spiritual quest, titiksha. Then, a deliberate withdrawal from too much engagement with the world, which is called uparati. Then samadhana, focus, stay on the spiritual path, settle down on the spiritual path. Samadhana. And then shraddha, a deep, sincere faith But there is truth here in what the teacher is saying, in which the Upanishads are saying, there is truth here. I shall let discover it for myself. And then, of course, finally, mumukshutvam, intense desire for freedom. Intense desire for freedom. This is the dhira akama. What will happen to then this person who worships the enlightened one and who's qualified, who sits near the enlightened one? They will attain enlightenment themselves. They'll attain freedom from birth and death. But the way it is phrased is interesting. Te shukram etad ativartanti. Literally, it means they go beyond the male reproductive cell. So what they go beyond the cycle of reproduction. They go beyond being embodied. They go beyond the cycle of birth and death. They will not be born again. But why in this particular phrase? It's because we sentient beings, how are we born? The idea is that first you enter the body of the father and then pass into the body of the mother, and then the sentient being is born as a baby. So that's how one is born. This entering into the body of the father and coming forth as the male reproductive cell, this is called shukram. So they transcend this process altogether. All these sentient beings, they go beyond this cycle of birth and death. They do not take a body again. They are not embodied. They are not limited anymore. They exist as the limitless ultimate reality, which they already are, but then they recognize it, and that brings it, this whole drama, to an end. What does Shankaracharya says? What does he say? Saveda janati, the one who realizes that I am Brahman. What is this Brahman? Paramam utkrishtam, that which is transcendent, supreme Brahman. Dhamma, he explains dhamma as sarva kamanam ashrayam aspadam, the abode of all fulfillment. Whatever we are seeking fractionally in the transient world of sensory fulfillment, human fulfillment, all of that you get, and beyond that and permanently, when you realize who you are. That is why it's dhamma. And then very beautifully, Vishwam samastam jagat nihitam arpitam. This entire universe, without any exception, the vast and the tiny, living and non-living, good and the bad, they're all set in this absolute reality. Set means they are not part of it. And they are not produced by that ultimate reality. Ultimate reality is not a creator. They are an appearance in that. So, bhati, it shines. Shines. Svena jyotisha bhati, shines by its own light. It is shining by its own light. Swaprakash, as I said. Not consciousness, not by subject, using an instrument of knowledge, knowing another object. No, it is self-revealed, self-luminous. In Sanskrit, swaprakasha. And then he says, shubhram, shuddham, pure. Pure here means beyond karma, beyond, and also holy, as Gambhiranji translated, shines holy. Then he says, Atmagyam Purusham, this enlightened being, Akama, Vibhuti Trishna Vajjita, Mumukshava Santa, those who are Mumukshu, the seekers of freedom. And he says they are qualified by this term, free from seeking worldly glory. Vibhuti here means worldly and otherworldly powers, actually. So, in one sense, yes, this person has transcended all worldly desires, but there might be supernatural desires. Many people get caught in this chasing vibhutis, extraordinary powers, reading other people's mind, levitating, things like that. So, vibhuti trishna vajjita, devoid of the hunger, the thirst for worldly and otherworldly powers and glory. Mumukshava Santa, being seekers of freedom. Upasate. Paramiva sevante. So how does Shankaracharya explain upasate, worshipping the Guru? As if the Guru is the ultimate reality. Very interesting way. Paramiva. As if the Guru, which I am seeing from an enlightened perspective, this is the Guru appearing as a human person. But the truth is, this Guru is the ultimate reality. And so are we all. So as if this Guru is the ultimate reality, is a manifestation of that ultimate reality, then we approach the Guru with that kind of reverence. That's why again and again we find in Hinduism, Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Devo Maheshwara, Guru Reva Param Brahma, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Guru is Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara. Guru is the ultimate Brahman, and we salute such a guru. Or in Dakshinamurti Stotra, we find Shankaracharya himself is saying that that Ishvara, God, Guru, the spiritual teacher, and the self. They are all three manifestations of Dakshinamurti. The deity, the ultimate reality, appears as you yourself, as your spiritual teacher, and the God of this universe. So, Paramiva Upasate. And he says, this person, just as the guru has gone beyond samsara, will never be reborn again. Guru has become Jivan Mukta, liberated in this life. And Videha Mukti will get liberation after the bodiless liberation. These are our calculations. Brahman itself is ever free. But from our perspective, here is a person who was bound like me, did sadhana, spiritual practices, attained enlightenment, and is now called Jivan Mukta, free while living. And after the death of the body, we will say that the person is Videha Mukta, bodiless freedom. From that person's perspective, first of all, that person is no longer regards himself or herself as a person. Regards himself or herself as that. There's no himself or herself there. It's a limitless existence, consciousness place. And the persistence of the body and the eventual dropping of that particular body does not make a difference to that enlightened one. In principle, it does not make a difference. The next one we'll discuss. Why we don't get enlightened, and the reason is desire. The next mantra will straight away say it's desire. And how do we overcome that desire? That also will be discussed in this mantra and the next one, second and third one. That we'll see next time. Let's look at the questions and comments. Oh, Swami Vivekananda is a comedian. Okay. Brahman also is a comedian. He's very funny, actually. And then Shriram and Rekha, they say, Jiva Srishti versus Ishvara Srishti represent one consciousness without a second, or represents Vishishtadvaita. What is the implication of this doctrine of Vidyaranya energy for sadhana? Jiva Srishti and Ishvara Srishti means the creation of God. Jiva Srishti means our personal, individual sentient beings' creation. What does this mean? It's an interesting idea. Which was is propounded in the Panchadashi, a text by Vidyaranya Swami. The point he makes is, quite apart from Brahman, Maya, ultimate reality, it is even this world as it is, which is the creation of God, that also is not a cause of sorrow. It has been placed here and is perfectly suited for our spiritual evolution and freedom. That's what it's supposed to do. Then what really gives us sorrow is not the world. What really constitutes samsara is not the world created by Ishvara, by God. It's what we impose upon it. What has Ishvara created? The five elements: space, air, fire, water, earth, and the bodies and the minds and the external universe. None of this will give sorrow to us. What is the proof? The proof is, even while going through life, those who are enlightened, they will say that, no, we are really not in sorrow. Even at the point of death, even in disease, they will say we are fine. Sri Ramakrishna's example is there, in a terminal cancer. He admits that he is still in the midst of pain, in the dying body. He admits he is in bliss. So the world, body, life, death, none of them really give us sorrow. Then what gives us sorrow is our ignorance and the consequent mistakes we make. I am this body, with the aging of the body, I am aging, oh no. And with the disease, I am sick, and I am going to die, oh my God. And people are nasty to me, people do not love me, people do not obey me. These are all my projections. Why should I want love and obedience from people? Why? So, from the perspective of the enlightened being, we are absolutely contented. It's because we are seeking fulfillment from the world and fulfillment from the people. That's why we have such tremendous expectations, and they're bound to be dashed. Those expectations are because of our superimposition. Vedantic knowledge and your enlightenment. With that enlightenment, live in this world of Ishvara Srishti, the creation of Ishvara, you'll have no problem at all. So the problem is because of our ignorance, because of our lack of enlightenment. That's the problem. Enlightened people, and at no time in history and in no religion have enlightened people ever complained that, yes, I'm enlightened, but I have so many complaints and problems in life. No, never. That means you can live in this life, in this body, and in this world, creation, Ishvara Srishti. But tackle your Jiva Srishti first. And that for that we need Jiva Srishti is the projection of the sentient being. So for that we need spiritual knowledge. Jnana, knowledge, bhakti, devotion, dhyana, stilling the mind. Mind itself is samsara. Still the mind, samsara will disappear. Mary Ellie says, seems like these ideas, explanation, just preparation for surrender for listening attachments. Certain point, don't you think about these ideas, but just living from this perspective? Yes. You live from this perspective. Even when fall off and are upset about something, there's a distance or observer of it for a while until enlightenment. Is that correct? Yes, it is certainly correct. It's well, that is well said. Most of these are constructs, and they are like a scaffolding, helping us towards enlightenment. And when you do get it, you realize that these are approximations of the truth. And these are helpful. These teachings, this knowledge, these meditations, this purification, all of these are helpful. But once you attain it, they're no longer less necessary for you. They're good. You may even persist with them, but you don't. See, anything that the mind depends on is still within the realm of Maya. Once we realize our true nature, we are not dependent on the body mind, far less than the constructions and the methods and the knowledge and the practices of the mind. But those really don't matter anymore. When you continue to live, and yes, another way of putting it is surrender. Surrender means it's like the ornament surrenders to the gold in that sense, the wave surrenders to the water in that sense. Realizes that I am nothing but this, I am nothing but that Brahman. Or in a devotional sense, surrender to God as a deity. That also is the same thing in a sense of devotion, emotion. Shriram says, does Vishwanihitam have the same import as Vasudeva Idam Sarvam? Vasudeva Idam Sarvam. How does it inform our sadhana? So, Bhagavad Gita, it says that Vasudeva Sarvam Iti, that the ultimate realization is everything is Brahman. Yes, that is what it means. The universe is set in Brahman, just means everything is Brahman. Everything is God, to put it in general terms. Or as Vivekananda said, everything is not, God only is. That is even more precise. When you say everything is God, so you're admitting there is everything. Yes, we admit that we experience everything, but the existence belongs to Brahman, not to them. So it is incorrect to say everything is. And then it is Brahman. No, everything is not. Brahman is. How does it inform our sadhana? Yes, it is the most powerful boost to all sadhana. Everything is Brahman. You are Brahman. What will you want from the world? You become completely selfless. As a person, the limited person becomes self-denying, selfless, perfect self-abnegation, as Vivekananda put it. Bhakti. As this person, now for you, God is real. It's no longer a matter of belief. The same Brahman, the absolute reality which you are, with the adornment, with the veil of Maya, now becomes the Ishwara, the Lord of this vast universe. Immediately, you surrender in joy, in tears, in bliss, and in reality. It's no longer a matter of emotion or faith. It's real. God is real. So bhakti becomes real for the first time. Sri Krishna says, the greatest of all bhaktas, to me, the greatest of all bhaktas are the jnanis. Those who have realized they are the greatest bhaktas, the enlightened ones, the greatest devotees, the greatest lovers of God. Because he says that for I am real for them. Then meditation. Meditation becomes so easy and perfect. With eyes closed and eyes open, you're poised in samadhi. In fact, the samadhi will become what is called sahaja samadhi, natural samadhi. Because you are experiencing Brahman everywhere, all the time, choicelessly. You're meditating in spite of yourself, with eyes closed and eyes open. It's not that you're always thinking about it, but it's just like that, it's available to you all the time. So Priyanka says, in Sankhya, instead of multiple Purushas, if you assume a single Purusha, which we truly are, it seems like a very convincing and logical philosophy. Is it fair to say that the primary difference between Sankhya and Advaita is establishing the relationship between subject and object? Sankhya aims to distance the object from the subject, while the Advaita aims to sublate the object back into the subject. Perfectly put. Sankhya, there are two major differences between Sankhya and Advaita Vedanta. One is the Bahupurushavada. There are many selves, or the many Purushas, many Atma. Of course, they don't speak about Brahman. So Advaita, as you said, we are all one consciousness. All right, that's a big one. But then the next big one is the independent reality of prakriti, of material nature. The object is something separate from material nature, exists by itself. We are mixed up with the object. That is our problem. We need to separate ourselves and see ourselves as pure spirit. Advaita says, yes, you do that, but then consider what is the object, the entire universe, what is it? It's nothing other than an appearance of the spirit itself. So you have what is called sublation, badhita. The world will be experienced. The Sankhya will say, you are experiencing a real and external world. Advaita will say, you are experiencing yourself. It is nihitam, Vishwa nihitam. This world is set in Brahman and it shines holy. What we just read now. So this is the second big difference between Advaita and Sankhya. Yes. So Sankhya is fundamentally dualistic. Dualistic. Advaita is, as the name suggests, non-dualistic. What appears as a second is not a real second. It's an appearance of Brahman itself. Dharmesh says, does your method of Prameya, Pramana, Pramata same as the method shown in Drigdrisha Viveka? Not really. Prameya, Pramana, Pramata is the standard epistemology in Indian philosophy. A knower, instrument of knowledge, object of knowledge. All schools of Indian philosophy have their theories of these three. Who is the knower? How does the knower function? What are the instruments of knowledge? And what are the objects of knowledge? Different schools of Indian philosophy will have different theories of these. But here we are just using this to show the self-luminosity, to prove, logically prove the self-luminosity, the case, make a case for the self-luminosity of the self. Swaprakasha Bhati shines forth. Sanket Patil says, the infinite regress you referred to, can it be solved like this? A knows B, B knows C, and C knows A. Yes, so that will there'll be another fault. It's called a Chakraka, a cyclical argument. So I know B and B knows C, but then C knows A. So you don't need another one after that. But no, you cannot do it like that. That's also a fault. So it makes one dependent on the earlier one. So there'll be two faults. Either you will fall into the trap of the cyclical argument, or you will fall into the trap of the regressus ad infinitum, the without ground. There'll be no end to that, this infinite regress. Dimitri says, does self-luminous mean that Brahman is self-aware without the need of mind acting as a mirror? Ah, it's a subtle question. Direct answer to you, yes, but careful how you understand it. Brahman is not self-aware the way we are self-aware. We are self-aware right now because of, yes, of course, because of consciousness, but consciousness reflected in the mind. There are thoughts and feelings, and they help us to reflect ourselves back, and we become aware of our own existence as the knower of thoughts, as the seer of forms, the hearer of sounds, the one whose senses, whose being is here, the bodily sensations. All of these makes us self-aware. And notice this kind of self-awareness disappears in partially in dreams and totally in deep sleep. So this self-awareness disappears. So Brahman is not self-aware in that sense, by sort of objectifying oneself or using the help of some objects like sensations or mind. Okay. Now, here is the subtle part of it. I'm glad you asked this question. This goes really deep. A question might arise then is, when the luminosity of Brahman, its own existence, for that you require the mind. We require the mind. To see my face, I do require a mirror. To see my face, I do require a mirror. Similarly, to know myself, this so-called self-luminosity, it still requires the mind, does it not? What is the answer to this? Two levels of answer. One is the first level, these are all very subtle and beautiful insights. First level is what does the mind do for Brahman and what does Brahman do for the mind? The mind, what does Brahman do for the mind? Illumines the mind. Without Brahman, without pure consciousness or Atman, not, the mind would not be known at all. There would be no mind to be experienced. Mind doesn't experience itself. It's an object, a subtle object, just the thoughts. Think A, B, C, D. If you were not conscious, would A, B, C, D appear? Not at all. So mind, which is just nothing but thoughts and perceptions and, you know, so though it is illumined by Brahman. Brahman provides illumination for the mind. What does mind provide for Brahman? What does mind provide for Brahman? Mind manifests Brahman as existence consciousness. Without mind, it's like deep sleep. Brahman would seem to be non-manifest. Remember, I'll go deeper and cut this down also, which is the first level explanation, which is a fine explanation. What does mind do for Brahman? And what does Brahman do for the mind? What does Brahman do for the mind, body, senses, world? Brahman gives this entire thing existence, ground. Right? Remember, it is set in Brahman and it gives it illumination, experience. What does all this mind, senses, body, specifically mind, what does it do for Brahman? It manifests Brahman, that Brahman is becomes evident. Just like the eyes. What do the eyes do for these objects? The eyes can see these objects. The objects are seen because of the eyes. But what do the eyes, the objects do for the eyes? The objects prove to you that you have got eyes. You can't see the eyes directly, but you will know that you have got eyes because you are seeing the objects. The objects are manifesting the existence of the eyes for you. And the eyes are revealing the objects for you. All right. This is one level. But let's go deeper. In Sankhya, it is true. Consciousness depends on nature, mind, and senses, and body. And nature depends on consciousness. They depend on each other, they work together. And the example they give is of a lame person and a blind person. The lame person cannot go anywhere because he can't walk, and the blind person cannot go anywhere because he can't see. But the blind person carries the lame person on his shoulders, and the lame person gives the directions to the blind person. The blind person can walk, so together they can go places, they can achieve things, they can get things done. In the same way, consciousness cannot do anything by itself. In Sankhya, consciousness just shines. And material nature has no experience at all. It's like the blind. So together, however, consciousness gives awareness to material nature, and material nature gives power and capacity to consciousness to get things done. And you see that in our bodies itself. I am aware, but everything else is done by mind, senses, body. And for this itself is put, you know, there's a nice saying that religion is powerless without science, and science is blind without religion. So, like that. But this is in the in Sankhya, and we have the second level of explanation. Here is the second level. In Advaita, this is not a problem because mind and senses and body and the universe are nothing other than Brahman. They are Brahman only. We just read that now. It is set in Brahman. Yatra Vishwam Nihitam Bhati Shubhram. Which shines in a holy way, set in Brahman itself. Your mind is your glory. Why will you say you are dependent on the mind? It's your glory. You, Brahman, you are projecting yourself as the mind. And then using it to reflect yourself in it. So, yes, the second level. Now, even further, and this is really subtle, you have to catch it. This is also a doorway to enlightenment. Brahman and the mind, right? Atman and the mind, pure consciousness and mind. Here is this final insight I'll share with you. And this comes from a great direct path teacher, a non-dualist, Atmananda, Krishna Menon. Krishna Menon. These books are not available much nowadays. They're called Atma Darshan and Atma Nivritti. Short books, just all written as points, 1, 2, 3, 4. I found a copy in here in Swami Tathagatanandji's library. Let me read out the exact words of Atmananda. I think I can read it out to you. So this is the book I found. It's old book, rather torn and tattered. So it's all like this, points. Now I will read out something to you. This is the final and finest and most subtlest answer to what Dimitri is asking. He who says that consciousness is never experienced without its object, mind, huh? Speaks from a superficial level. If he is asked the question, are you a conscious being? He will spontaneously give the answer, yes. This answer springs from the deepmost level. Here, he doesn't even silently refer to anything as the object of that consciousness. This proves that the consciousness he refers to is objectless consciousness. He who says, so this is the answer, this is the crux of the answer. It's like, yes, the mirror manifests my face, and I can use the mirror as a reflection of my face, and I can become aware of my face with the mirror. However, is it true to say that when I remove the mirror, I'm not aware of my face? I'm not seeing my face, but do I suddenly feel my face has disappeared? I can't see it. I'm fully aware that I am the face. That's an example. In the same way, is Atman aware of itself, Brahman aware of itself? Not in the way we are aware, self-aware now. But it is not unaware. It is pure consciousness. And then two more comments he makes. He who says, I have consciousness or I am conscious is separating consciousness from himself. This is surprising. You must see why it is surprising. It is the enlightened. For us, it's most common to speak like that. I am conscious. Yeah, what's wrong with that? No. For the enlightened one, this is a most strange thing to say. What is not consciousness comes under the category of the known. The I is always the knower and can never be the known. Therefore, consciousness and I are one and the same. Worth thinking about what he has said, especially that point. The feeling that we get after studying Vedanta, Sankhya, analyzing all this, that somehow consciousness is manifested by the mind. I just said earlier, what does the mind do for consciousness? Manifests consciousness. What does consciousness do for the mind? Illumines mind. This is also superficial. Consciousness does not depend on the mind. However, mind does depend on consciousness, there's no doubt about it. Mind is also nothing but an appearance of consciousness. Yes, Dimitri and Bhargavateja also. I hope this is, I don't know if it's satisfactory, but it's certainly food for thought. John Lura says from the last week question, perhaps my discernment of awareness separate from mind is not an unnecessary step. Perhaps simply abiding in the abode of Brahman is all. Yes. Simply abiding in the abode of Brahman as Brahman, it is all. But to discover what that abode is, one must at least preliminarily know that I exist without the mind. Sonali says, knowing my own existence directly as self-revealed also proves that knowing an existence is one. Yes. Consciousness is, and isness is nothing other than consciousness. Abhijit says, we have heard that Nididhyasana meditation on the teaching after hearing and getting clarity. Does this meditation eventually settle into an inquiry into our self-experience, Atma Pratyaya? Who and from where is this I am experience, or is there a meditation which is different from the self-inquiry? No, this self-inquiry will deepen into this meditation. Self-inquiry has this process of Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. Shravana properly done will introduce us to a procedure of self-inquiry. Dhrigdrishya Vivek is a procedure of self-inquiry, seer and seen. Panchakosha Vivek, the five layers of the human personality, is a procedure of a self-inquiry. Avasthatraya Vichara, waking, dreaming, deep sleep, you are the witness of that. It's a procedure of self-inquiry. All of these are procedures of self-inquiry. And self-inquiry should deepen into this non-dual meditation on the stillness of the mind, you as the witness of the mind, and you alone without any reference to the mind at all. Let the universe disappear, let the body disappear, let the mind completely disappear. Nothing is lost. You are that which always was. All right, and all that abstract stuff, let us bring it to a close. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Shri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.